Hello, everybody. Thanks for coming. And this session's agenda is networking. We heard so much about how networking is important, and now we have Lori Conlon, and it's my great pleasure to introduce Lori here today, who will talk about networking. Lori was trained as a biochemist. She received her bachelor's degree from Michigan State University and a PhD degree in biochemistry and biophysics from Texas A&M University. She was trained as a postdoc at Wadsworth Center, New York State Department of Health. And during that time, she became interested in career development issues, and she transitioned from bench work to administrative job. And she joined NIH this year, but before she was a director of Science Alliance International Career Development Program sponsored by New York Academy of Science, and now she is director of Office of Postdoctoral Services here at OIT. And please welcome Lori.
Thank you. A little bit of fun in our last little seminar of the day, Networking 101. You can't hear me. I need a mic. That's okay. I'll use this one. Oh, good. Here we go. Oh, man, I got to stay stationary.
Now I have to stand still. That's okay.
So everybody's tired. It's been a long day. Have you learned some things today? Okay, name one person, give me a tidbit of information that they took away today that's the golden. You undervalue yourself, and networking is very important. You've heard that a few times today, have you not? Okay, let's do a little word association. I say networking, you say? Never. Is that a word? Never? What else? Find a job. People. Louder. Difficult. Most people never say fun. You said fun. Yay, we have one person that says fun. Networking can be fun, but it also can be one of the most intimidating things because it's always feeling like you're having to ask somebody for a job. Please, please give me a job. It's not just that, and hopefully we'll try to convince you of that throughout the talk. Does anybody know who this guy is? What? What's that? I heard one. Charles Dickens. Kind of. Nope, not quite. Think of current affairs. This is Joseph Pulitzer. The Pulitzer Prizes were just awarded this week. In fact, the Washington Post, which I've now become very loving of, my free express post in the morning, got six, the best that a newspaper's ever done. Well, Pulitzer originally created these prizes, which are basically the Nobels in the world of journalism, to celebrate good journalism. And let's think for a moment that the basic key things of networking are not that unusual of good reporting. When you guys were probably in high school and taking English, everyone told you that to write a good story, you have to know the who, the what, the when, the where, the why, and the how. If you've got six things, you've got a great story. These six topics are also the things that will help you lead yourself to a really nice networking job, right? You can do anything with networking. Okay, let's talk the first thing. We're going to break apart why. Why are you networking? Find a job. It's always the first answer. What else do you networking for? Learn what's out there, to exchange information, collaborations. All good answers. You network for a lot of different things. I don't know how many of you know that I've been in the NIH for 3 weeks now, the long tenure of 3 weeks. I moved here from Manhattan. I knew a lot about Manhattan in the 2 years I lived there, but now I live here. I'm networking to find out where all the good restaurants are. And in fact, after my last first talk today, I've got 3 new ones. So if anybody wants to network for restaurants, that's what I'm networking for right now. What you're networking for often will change in where you're at in your career. Whether it's a job, whether it's a reagent, whether it's just to make friends. Thank you. I always felt like I'm like dark up here. What you're networking for has different things. So knowing what you need at any time is the good part of networking. Okay, networking, though, is defined by Dave Jensen, who is the leader of the Science Careers Forum on the AAAS sciencecareers.org board. Of networking is the process of establishing links between people with the intent to promote communication for mutual benefit. A lot of times people think networking is one-sided. I'm asking for something. I'm always asking for either a job or a reagent, and that's what networking is. You got to remember that someday down the road, that networking coin may change, and they may be asking you for a job or you for a reference. So while at the initial benefit may feel like it's all for you, you're making that communication for a long-term opponent. So, okay, tell me who your network is. These people right here next to you, all right? Who else? Family. Friends. Bosses, is that what I heard? All right, anybody else? All right, you ready? My poor sign language interpreter. Your friends, your relative, your friends of relatives, your relatives of friends, your spouses and significant others and relatives. Actually, everybody you know. Some of the most important people you network are not even people you think about. Your rep, the VWR rep's a fantastic rep place to network. There's all kinds of different places you network. Let me give you a quick story on using your family to network. When Sean and I, my husband Sean is a scientist as well, when we were looking for jobs, we wanted to go back to Michigan. That's where I grew up. And I thought, well, let's go to Pfizer. That's a great place to go work. I didn't know anybody at Pfizer, so I started to ask my family. I said to my sister-in-law, who's a legal assistant or a legal secretary in a law firm, do you know anybody who works at Pfizer? Dawn says, well, not really, but let me ask the attorneys that I work with. And by golly, through their network, we eventually did find somebody who did work at Pfizer to start asking questions about jobs at Pfizer. Got the CV transfer all done. Never really got too much information back. Does anybody know what happened to Pfizer in Ann Arbor about 4 years ago? They're gone. So no wonder that I didn't get anything out of that conversation, but it is a really nice little networking story to start using your family and your friends to make those connections. People you don't normally think about. You know, Dawn's a legal secretary. It's not she knows a lot of scientists. I think I'm the only one. But let's distill that down, because that other list is, for most of us, is just too large and too cumbersome. There are people within your current network who can actually help you. Let's take a quick second. Where have your friends and lab mates who are within your lab gone on to? They're not all still there, I promise. Has anybody gone someplace interesting? Wow, you guys are tired. Okay, we'll talk again then about me. My class, I graduated from Texas A&M, was a small class. We had about 16 of us. From those 16, we all went very different places. We are statistically significant in that one of us went and did a tenure-track faculty position. He's at Harvard. We have another gentleman who's at a small liberal arts college in Louisiana. We have a couple that are in industry in the Bay Area that I can't keep track of, because when you work in the Bay Area, you switch companies like every 6 months, I swear. We have one person who is, she was a fluorescence biochemist, who then went on to work at Kraft doing cheese biochemistry. Something totally different. We have a patent agent, a patent lawyer. We have a couple that are still doing, they're finishing up their postdocs. I'm about 6 years out of my PhD. And then we have myself, who does career development, and three who I think are the interesting ones. Paul went to work for the FBI. Van Zyl went to go, and he joined the Army as an officer, and he ran the VA hospital out in El Paso. And Schmidt joined the Navy as an officer and ran the drug testing facility for the Pacific Fleet. Basically, he was sitting on court martials, and if the petty officer said, I'm sorry, sir, I did not inhale, his job was to tell the court martial that, yes, he did. So now he's actually doing biodefense. But from that group of 16, boy, what a network. You know, I can call these people anytime to network within this group. If you guys wanted to go into the military, I can help you find that kind of things. Those are the networks that we originally want to start with. They're our friends, they're our colleagues, they're safe. The next thing to move into is in probably an alumni association. And we're going to go along with that with professional societies. How many of you do belong to a professional society? Very good. How many of you belong to like the big ones, like AAAS? Not as many. Most of us don't belong to AAAS or actually any societies anymore, because why should we? We get the journals via NIH, and that was really the only reason you were supposed to join a journal, right? You're getting the journal. Professional societies are really starting to recreate themselves, and alumni associations as well, as the place where you network for jobs. Because as a member, you can access those member directories and find anybody within the community that's doing perhaps the kind of jobs that you're going to want to look for. I think the other thing you learned most today is to really think about what you want to do. And that helps when you're going to these huge databases of professional societies. If you know what you want to do, you can then target the type of people who are going to help you get where you want to get. Okay. Most of you, though, do probably want to find a contact that's going to be helpful. You have no idea. For example, let's say you want to go into industry. How would you find an industry contact? At a meeting, at a conference. Thank you. Conferences are a fantastic place to network. How many of you have gone to a conference where there are industry representatives? Have you ever talked to those people? A couple of you, very good. There's some really great ways to snag them when you're at those conferences. First is, when you get that poster abstract book, go through and find out any company that's going to be presenting a poster. Whether or not you want to work for that company or not. Your job is to go up and talk to that person and figure out what their job is, what they like about their job, where they see the industry going, do they know anything about what their competitors are doing, and really finding that connection between the two of you and swapping a business card at the end of the day. The other good place to find company contacts is through publication records. My husband set up a thing when he had PubMed be able to filter out things just that were specifically published by companies. And that way he can find out who's publishing and what kind of work they're doing. This helps you to target what companies are doing the work that you're most interested in, and perhaps even like location within, you know, you can search for Boston area versus Bay Area. So looking through PubMed to see who's publishing. Although that's not the end all be all, because not every company gets to publish. So you probably should also be checking the patent records as well. Looking at patent records is a great way to see what kind of industries and innovations are coming out of the biotech industries. Finding somebody who does interesting work, asking around, looking for their publications, asking at conferences, that's the best way. Because that way when you make that cold call email, "Hi, my name is Joe, I'm a grad student at the NIH, I saw your recent work or heard about your recent work, and this is why I'm interested." You have a way to start the discussion versus, can I have a job? That usually is not going to lead you very far. All right. The last one, though, is, okay, fine, I've sent my resume in. I need an HR contact. But it says, no phone calls, please, Lori. They lie. I would have lost out on two jobs, both at the New York Academy of Sciences and the NIH, if I would have listened to this piece of advice. Both times I sent my things in via email, I get the email thing back saying, please come for an interview, twice, 4 years apart, or 2 years apart, sorry. It went into my spam file. I had no idea that was there. If I wouldn't have picked up the phone and called that HR person, I would have never known that they were actually interested in me. So the two pieces of advice here. First, when you're actually on your job hunt, clean out your spam folder very often so that you know if something got shunted there incorrectly. Second, just pick up the phone. What you're probably going to get to is voicemail, and the conversation goes like this. Hi, my name's Lori. I sent in my resume last week. I just wanted to know if you had any questions or if there's anything I can clarify. I'm really excited about this opportunity, and I think I can add value by doing X, Y, and Z, and give a nice detailed callback number. And another thing, when you do make these phone calls and you want somebody to return your phone call, always repeat your phone number slowly and carefully. That way they can actually, so they've written half of it down the first time, and they'll get the second half of it the second time. You guys are nodding your heads like you know what this is like. There's nothing worse than a phone person who sends you a phone call and then rattles off their phone number faster than you can possibly ever write it down. How many of you think that using a headhunter is the way to network for a job? Probably not going to happen. Headhunters are fantastic if you're higher up in the food chain. As entry-level positions, which most of us are trying to get, headhunters aren't really looking for us. If you're higher up or if you have some specialized skill, the headhunter will find you. You don't find the headhunter. So don't count on this as the way to define your network. Any questions so far, guys? All right. So we've talked about the why you network. We talk about who is your network. Now, when do you network? Every single day. When you're standing in line in the coffee, how many people met somebody new at coffee? How many people met somebody new at lunch? How many people are going to stay around for the networking receptions tonight? Great. Your job is just to shake somebody's hand, tell them who you are and what you do, and to really find out another connection. When you're making that small talk, like I do, trying to find all the new restaurants, do you guys get a chance to meet with speakers? I hope so. Meeting with speakers is one of the best ways to network up. It's very usually low-key. It's typically over a meal. For some of you, it's the Voices of Home series, which the visiting fellows at FELCOM put on, which is a fantastic series. This is a way to really connect with somebody because it's not necessarily that you want a job at Iowa State University. It's more that that person may have a contact that you can start deciphering over conversations. I always went to these things and led the conversations of how many people do you have in your lab, where have they gone on to. You know, you can ask these generic questions about their lab, but then find out, you know, that they know somebody who went to Merck a couple years ago. Then you can follow up with them later. And we already talked a bit about conferences, but I want to do a couple of things about conferences and good ways to network. How many people go to big conferences? Those are harder, aren't they? There's a lot of people. You tend to feel flooded. But there's still some, you know, look, going around the continental breakfast and things are the great places to network. How about big conferences? Small conferences. FASEB and Gordon. These ones are the best places to network because you usually have to eat all your meals together. And you'll notice that the big wigs at lunch and dinner tend to get surrounded. I recommend if you're trying to hit up one of these people who are more popular and you want to network with them, to get them at breakfast. Less people go to breakfast. And it's a great place to be a little bit more relaxed. You have a little bit more time. Ask them to meet at breakfast. It's a much easier place to meet people than the coffee line or after their talk or anything like that. Try for breakfast. That means you have to get up too, though. All right. Let's talk about a little bit of how. You really want somebody to help do introductions for you. And you need to think about what you can provide to the relationship, maybe not today, but maybe down the road, and what you can benefit. But more importantly than either one of these questions, because those are harder to answer, is who do you really want and need to meet? We recently saw a thing that how many steps does it take to get to Steve Jobs, get an introduction to Steve Jobs? It's like 5 or 6 steps through various mechanisms. You don't necessarily need the CEO of the company, though. A lot of times you're looking for what we call the peer-plus-2 network. This peer-plus-2 network is our people who have left the labs about 2 to 3 years ahead of you and have moved on to that next career path. These are those entry-level positions that you'll be going into. They may not be the hiring managers. They may not be making the decisions, but they're going to tell you what the job is really like and help you pass around within the company. They're probably your best allies because they've been sitting in your seats not so long ago. And then have them make the introductions. The best way to do this is have somebody else make the introduction for you. It's having Dawn, my legal secretary sister-in-law, try to make introductions to Pfizer for me. Now we're going to take a second and talk about the handshake. How many of you have ever shaked hands with a limp fish? How many of you have ever shaken hands with, Hulk Hogan? Right, where you felt like your hand was going to be crushed. I want you to take a second, introduce yourself to your neighbor, shake their hand, and be critiqued, yes or no, on whether they gave a good handshake. All right, how'd they do? Thumbs up, thumbs down. Be honest with them, please. This is their one chance to get an honest answer. You know, you should be, when you're shaking someone's hand, going web to web, wrapping all the way around in a nice firm handshake. It's really important to have a firm handshake, especially in the American culture. It shows that you have presence and assertiveness, like Peter said earlier this morning. I do also recommend business cards. I'm a vendor today because I have mine have yet to come in. I've only been here 3 weeks. You should have business cards, though. You should be making them at home if the NIH will not provide them for you. I don't know the answer to that. It was kind of a murky answer that I got when I asked that one. It can say postdoc extraordinaire. I don't care. But you can have them. You should have business cards. Okay, we'll call them calling cards then. Go back to Victorian ages. You should have something to leave with somebody that has your name on it, that has a way to contact you. It's really beneficial information. And also, when someone hands you their business card, take a moment to look at it. When I was first in this business card playing poker, I feel like you stand around the table playing poker, I would shove it in my pocket and go, thank you very much. You need to look at it. And if you're sitting around a table and everyone has given you business cards, line the business cards up in the order that the people are around the table, so that when the person next to you talks, you know that their name is this business card. Does that make sense? So that you have a reference. Also, I recommend that when you do get those business cards that people have handed to you, on the back, jot down a note, something that you talked about. So that when you're going back at the end of the day and you have your stack that is this high from the networking event that you just went to, and you're like, oh, God, the guy with the green shirt, we talked about some new antibody technology, and I really want to contact him, but which one is he? Right? You know which one that person is. So I always write down the business card and something on the back of a business card. All right, cold calls. These are the ones that are so tough. And there's two differences here. There's cold calls and then there's frozen calls. Right? Cold calls are when you're using somebody in your network, hopefully, to make an entry point. Frozen calls are those ones where you're just picking up the phone and saying, hi, my name is. When I first started at the New York Academy of Sciences 2 years ago, one of my first jobs was to try to call the NIH and get them to become members of the Academy. That's how the Academy ran. Never was very good at that sales part. I put it off for weeks because I was supposed to call this woman named Dr. Joan Schwartz. And she doesn't know the story, and I don't know if she's in here today. Dr. Joan Schwartz has always been involved in postdoc issues, and I've been in the postdoc issue population through the National Postdoc Association since its inception. And so I've always seen her around conferences, and she was always one of these, I can't contact her. She'll never return my phone call. She was the woman who got me over actually picking up the phone and making a call. Because I finally said to myself, if I can pick up the phone and call Joan Schwartz, I can pick up the phone call and pick up to anybody. She was the one who tipped me over the edge. You need some phone call to some bigwig that's going to tip you over the edge so the next phone call is easier. I never hesitated after that. I've contacted Peter Fisk cold call not many times, just once, and then we became friends. So you have to get over that first phone call of making that call. I promise you, it'll get much easier. I do recommend that you develop a script. However you want to do this, I always have bullet points of things that I want to make sure that I highlight within a conversation. Even to write down what my title is in the office, because especially now that I'm in a new office, I am the Director of Postdoctoral Services at the Office of Intramural Training and Education at the National Institutes of Health. Oy vey. That's a mouthful. So there's sometimes that I'll have my card in front of me. The other thing you may want to have in front of you when you're making a phone call is your telephone number that you can read off, because there's nothing more embarrassing than getting to the end of that phone call, message, voicemail that you're leaving, and you can't remember your phone number. It happens more often than you can imagine. Always state what you can do for them, you know, so you're making sure you have your homework. And make that call, those calls quick, short, and to the point. I think Peter said earlier this morning about 30 minutes. I usually say 15 to 30 and pray that it goes longer. It's good if it goes longer, but plan on 15 minutes, asking them for 15 minutes. How many of you have been to a cocktail reception? Do you like them, or are you a wallflower? It's tough. Going to a cocktail party or a conference or something where there's a lot of people and you're supposed to be networking is a little bit challenging. There are a couple of ways that you can go have some real successes. I recommend that you target at least two people within the room that you have to meet. You have to meet these people. The key thing about this is you're not just meeting those people, because while you're looking for that person, you're asking, hey, do you know so-and-so? I want to ask them a question about X, Y, and Z. And as you talk the room to get to the person you were really looking for, you've just made a huge network. But there's also entering and exiting a conversation. Okay, picture this. You're at a cocktail reception. There's a circle of people. You want in that circle. How do you get in that circle? Here's a couple tips. Make eye contact with somebody within the circle. Perhaps not the person you're really targeting to get in to talk to, but someone. And have them try to open the circle up so you can get in. And also, as someone in the circle, if you see somebody who wants to get in, back up a little bit and let them in. You know, karma comes back to you. So once you've made eye contact, they're starting to make a little room for you, and you now want to join in the conversation and show that you are an intellectual being and not just a wallflower. Watch the conversation, listen to the questions, and then once a question has been asked, ask a follow-up question on that one. It gives you a chance to listen and see what's going on and also contribute to the conversation so that people notice you. And this is the point, after you've asked your question, that you can say, yeah, my name is Lori, right? So you can participate as part of that. Peter Fisk already talked a little bit about making eye contact. I can't see anybody from here, so I can't tell if your eyes are blue or green or red or purple. But make eye contact enough that you can tell the color of someone's eyes. And you may want a tagline. Mine is, hi, my name is Lori. I work in career development for young scientists. I focus on their career exploration and skill development, making sure that they follow their own career path. That's my elevator speech, right? So that's what I'll talk about, and that'll jump us into a conversation. You each need something very similar when you're talking about your own work or where you want to go, even though you'll never use it in an elevator, because I've never known anyone to talk in an elevator except for, please press 4. So why we call it the elevator speech, I'm not sure. But you may want something like that. The other thing is, great, I've been in this conversation, and I am done. Let me out. How do you exit gracefully from a conversation? If you're in a circle, you can just back away and say, thank you guys, I really enjoyed it, I need to move on. You can say, just be honest, I see somebody else that I need to talk to, I really appreciate your time. You can be sneakier and say, please, I just need to go get another drink. Do you want one as well? Pray to God they say no. If they say yes, go get them their drink, obviously. Don't leave them high and dry. But as you return with their drink, give it to them. Say, thank you, it's been lovely to talk to you. I met Joe on my way to the bar. I just want to make sure that I connect with him as well. Gives you a little bit of an out into a conversation. Because there's nothing worse than getting stuck in a conversation that you don't want to be in, or knowing that there's somebody else you need to talk to. Which leads me to another tip. When you're at one of these cocktail receptions, don't do what I call it, I used to call it until I realized how bad it was, doing the Lori, which is you're looking around to see who else it is you were supposed to meet instead of having and participating in the conversation you're in. Bad form. Focus on the conversation you're in and then back up to then go look for who else you're supposed to have, because you have that target list that you're supposed to go after. But make sure that you're focusing on the conversation. Otherwise, you look like a flake. Any questions here? All right. Sure. I recommend, she's asked, the question is, when you're doing cold calls, should you pick up the phone or should you do an email? Email first. It usually offers the person to do it on their own time, right? If you don't get a response by email, then go by phone. Or try to set up a phone call within that original email. You'll get much more information by phone than you will by email, especially in the days of Blackberries. I just don't type that much. I'm sorry, I don't. So definitely email first to set up a phone call. But if that person doesn't respond, if this is somebody you really want to network with and they haven't gotten back from your email, feel free to either re-email them a week later saying, I don't know if you've seen this, but I just really would like to connect with you, and try it at a different time of the day. So try it before 9 a.m. or after 5 p.m. because you're more likely not to get stuck in the business world emails that come from 9 to 5. So try it on an off hour. Or call and follow up saying, I sent you an email, but I'd really like to talk to you. Yeah?
What is an optimal response time? So if you send an email or you leave a voicemail, how long do you wait till you get back to them?
So the question is, how long do you wait before you try to do the follow-up call? How long do you pine waiting for this person to return your communication? That really depends on who you're trying to contact and if the person even ever saw the email to begin with. I usually wait a week before I re-ping. I give somebody a week to get through their email box. Or maybe, I don't know how many of you know Garth Fowler. He was with AAAS. I think he was here last year for your job fair. Garth only does personal emails to me on Thursdays, and he'll flat out tell you that. Personal emails are Thursdays. So you may have to wait for that kind of thing to happen. So wait a full week. All right, follow-ups. These are always kind of going into the direction of what you've just asked. I'm going to recommend that you organize your contacts. I think NIH now requires, I've always been an Outlook person since I become a businesswoman. I think the NIH requires you to either use Outlook or Entourage. Is that correct? All of you are within those two things? Not quite. Any way you can do it, organize your contacts. Put your business cards that you're getting into one database. I use Outlook. You can use a spreadsheet. My other friend can't be bothered with all of this. She keeps them all in a notebook. I don't care how you do it. Just organize your contacts somehow, some way, so that you can find people. I have a card scanner because I meet so many people. There's no way that I'm going to type in all that information. Card scanners are only about $150. So I really recommend that you organize your contacts so that you can use them and also so that you can transport them from point A to point B. I just started a new job. I still have my 500 contacts in my email. When you do meet someone that you want to connect with again, make sure you email that person a personal note within 24 hours. Include something you discussed. It means nothing to say, thank you, it was very nice to meet you at the networking reception. I hope to see you again soon. That has no meat to it. Versus, it was very nice to meet you at the networking reception. I hope you made it home okay to let the dog out. Right? Even that has some kind of personal thing that you paid attention to what you talked about. There's some conversation in the community that sending a written thank you is extra special. It really depends on the person on how they will receive this. But if it's somebody you really want to make an impression on, by golly, it sure doesn't hurt. But I would definitely send the email first and then follow up with that written conversation. So you have the network. How do you foster that relationship over time? That's one of the hardest things. A lot of times you're not going to, but maybe 3 years down the road when it's time to do something, you'll rebuild that communication. I have friends at New England Biolabs from when I was a grad student. Then when I was finishing my postdoc, I called to see if they knew of anything in the area or where the direction of biotech was going in the Boston area. And I always start with, I hope you remember me in my email. Even if they don't remember me, they always say they did. Makes you feel good. So always start with, I hope you remember me, and tell them where you met, and perhaps something you talked about the first time you met. It makes that connection. Some people do email regularly, more regularly, all their contacts. That's totally up to you on how comfortable you are and how much you want to foster that relationship. But every time you do that email, don't just say, hi, it's Lori. Just checking to see how you're doing. Have something to offer to that relationship. A good friend of mine, Karen, always offers an article of interest. If something's come up in the literature, if something's come up with the American Competes Act or something like that, she'll take that article and say, hey, I thought of you from our past conversation. This is something maybe you haven't thought about. The other way to foster a relationship in science is to keep track of their publication records. And each time somebody publishes a new paper, send them a congratulatory note saying, hey, I saw your recent paper in Science. It's fantastic. I can't believe you figured out where all the bees are going. You know, something like that.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Of course.
Let's say, you know, you've talked about maybe friends that you made, and then now they're in New England Biolabs. You haven't talked to them in a long time. But let's say you meet someone tonight at a networking reception. You get their card, but for whatever reason you don't. There was no opportunity to talk to them for 2 years. Is it appropriate then to say 2 years later, hey, hello, we met at this networking reception?
Yes, it is totally appropriate to go back. The question is, say I meet somebody tonight at the networking reception. We have a decent conversation. 2 years down the road, I need them. Is it okay 2 years down the road to contact them again? 100%. The worst thing that's going to happen is they'll ignore your email and life will go on. Right? There's nothing to hurt by trying. There's nothing to... You just got to get over that first hump. That first hump of calling Joan Schwartz. Yeah. So the question is... Fine line between stalking and fostering a relationship. That is a fine line. But if every time you're going back to foster the relationship, you give a piece of information or you're sending a congratulatory note, you don't feel like a lurker. And that every time you're going back to that conversation, you're not asking for something, you're giving something. You know, we talked about in the initial slide, it's promoting communication for a mutual benefit. You're giving something to them. This way also shows that you're thinking about them, you're thinking about their work, you're thinking about something you've talked about in the past, and it doesn't even necessarily need to be something about science. Say somebody is a sailor, and you saw a recent article that the America Cup is coming to their town. You wanted to know if they're going. You know, that kind of question is perfectly acceptable. And just feel the vibe you get back. If the vibe is like, thank you very much, have a nice day, you may want to move on or let it kind of like relax for a while. Or if it's, oh my God, my son went and he got the ride on the, you know, take what you get back, take the feedback from what you have. Online networking is the rage right now. How many of you are on LinkedIn? Very good. I'm on LinkedIn. It's a very powerful tool. The thing about online networking that makes it so attractive is that it's anonymous. Nobody can see me, and I can do it in my pajamas if I want. It's a lot easier to make the entry to networking, and it's also more easier to find who knows who instead of continuously figuring out, oh, I just don't want to ask. That person already is online and has who's in their network. So, and you got to realize that if somebody's on LinkedIn, they don't mind if you send them an email to network because it's an online networking tool. So you should all be on LinkedIn and starting to make those foster those relationships. I'm on LinkedIn and I accept almost all emails. I accept almost all invitations. And I don't know very many people who do not, especially from postdocs and graduate students. I get a little pickier if they're not from the NIH, if they're somebody that I don't know. I get a little pickier. Back in the back. Ooh, very good question. What is LinkedIn? LinkedIn.com is an online networking tool where you can put in your business information, what you're looking for, and then you connect to your friends and your colleagues who then connect to their friends and their colleagues who then connect to their friends and colleagues. And so you start to have these really nice repertoires of people that are within your network that you can contact without ever having to pick up the phone. LinkedIn.com. The new one that's starting up is Nature Network, which is a very popular one for scientists in the Boston area. It's starting to pick up, and also in London. They've asked me if I would help them start an NIH community, and we'll see. The thing about Nature Network, it's obviously by Nature Publishing, is that it's more scientifically focused than LinkedIn, where you're going to get every Joe Schmo. And so Nature Network is also a good place to go. I haven't quite navigated it quite well enough yet. Sometimes I just get overwhelmed by all the choices. But Nature Network's another one. And then there's the more social networking that's available online. Facebook, Second Life, MySpace, those kinds of things. Who's on any of these? You can't access it through an NIH, which is good because it should never be professional. Right? These are, maybe MySpace is kind of taking, it's a little bit, but most of the people, when they're having stuff on MySpace, it's maybe not the most professional things that they've ever done in their lives. And I do recommend that if you are on any of these, what is publicly available, you wouldn't mind if your mother saw. Because I guarantee you that people who are in HR are going to each one of these things and looking for you to see what you're doing. And if you have pictures of your recent trip to Cancun, not so good. Don't recommend it. So make sure that what you do have in the public profile is something that you want everyone to see. She asked, if you're on LinkedIn, how do you actually use it? Because I've never actually seen anyone send in any email about anything. As you get further along in your professional career, it becomes a little bit more interesting, I promise. Right now, you're all postdocs, probably, graduate students. You don't feel like you have a lot to offer the conversation. But like for the next step up, that Peer Plus 2 network, it's a really helpful tool. So make sure you're connecting into that Peer Plus 2 network, because those are the people that are the movers and shakers that you want to be in touch with. You don't want to necessarily be in touch with another postdoc at the NCI. You want to be in touch with the postdocs who have moved on to industry. So, and it only works if the rest of your network actually uses it. If you're the only one within your network, then that's not working. You need to be building networks with other people who do have good networks. Otherwise, it's a useless tool. So, for example, mine, when I moved here, I updated all my contact information and sent it out to all my people in my LinkedIn, and I've got a lot of emails back saying, how you doing, we haven't talked in a while, those kinds of things. But you have to have it where it's a not just you are using it, but everybody's using it. And then it's something that you'll go to see, I need a speaker in California who can talk about this, and so I can go use that tool. But it only works if everybody's using it. And they are not a substitute for personal networking. They're an entryway, not a substitute. All right. So your network is, as you've heard all day, I don't know how many of you were at the industry panel this morning, where the panelists said that 90% of the jobs are actually got by networking and not by that traditional email path of inserting your resume here. Because a mediocre CV, stylistically, you know, where it's not perfectly lined up, all the rest of that stuff, you have to have the experience, you have to have the skills, you have to have actually what you can do. But a mediocre CV and a lot of networking is guaranteed to get you a job. A stunning CV and no networking is equivalent to playing the lotto. Has anyone here won the lotto? Didn't think so. I would not have gotten jobs without networking. Never. Both places. Would not have gotten jobs without networking. Because it's not just also the networking that you need. It's the who else do you know to find out if that's a place I want to work? Who else do you know that knows what the starting salary is for that kind of job? Those are the questions you're also looking for when you're looking for your network. You're looking to find out the information that you need to move on within your career. So this is the medal for the Pulitzer Prize. We started talking about the Pulitzer, and we'll end with the Pulitzer. Go out there and find your own prize. Find what it is with the who, what, when, where, why, and how that gets you the prize that you need, whether that's a restaurant in Bethesda, I'm taking all recommendations, or a job, or the latest antibody technology that you need. Networking's not too hard. Just have to get over that first call. So I'm going to give you a couple of references. My phone number and my email are down here in the bottom right. Feel free to contact me. I'll be happy to talk to anyone. I'm conlinlowe@mail.nih.gov. And I'm going to recommend a book called Never Eat Alone by Ferrazzi. I didn't think this would actually be anything decent for scientists. I actually thought it was going to be pretty much a joke considering the title. Fantastic reference for networking. Absolutely fantastic. Has some really good tips in it. And with that, I'll take some questions.
Thank you.
All right. I don't know who's first. Go ahead. Let me move back, not to this step, to the step before, when I took my first job outside the lab. Okay, he's asked, how did I get my first job outside the lab using my network? My network started to be built 6 years prior to when I wanted my job. I was a graduate student and realized that I enjoyed doing seminars on other careers than bench careers. So I started one, a seminar series, when I was a graduate student. I went on and did a postdoc to make sure that I really didn't want to do that academic job. Within a month, it was pretty clear. But I got a fellowship at the same time, so I wanted to wait out my fellowship. So I started a postdoc association where I was and started to get involved. I got involved with the National Postdoc Association. So using the National Postdoc Association, I networked and found out that there was jobs available like mine. I didn't know they existed. And then I could use that network to find out where the job openings were when it was time to go. So it was creating, over probably a six-year time period, an interest in a job, exploring who I was, self-assessing, and then moving on to finding who else did those kinds of things and asking them questions about, is this really a possibility? And really getting the information back. So when it came time for the job, when I first left the bench, the job was sent to me by my best friend who worked at Animal Kingdom and Disney. Not really career development. The job was sent to me by a friend of mine who was doing a fellowship here at the NIH. It was sent to me by another friend because these people knew what I wanted to do. And they knew the type of career that I was looking for. So when they saw something come across their desk, they threw it my way. And that's not uncommon to what I do now. So it's not only asking when you need it, but it's asking before you need it so that people keep their eyes open for you. Does that help? Good. But, okay, she's asked, what if I'm at the bottom of Peter Fisk's pyramid and I'm just in the self-assessment road? Should I just go home and eat bonbons and wait to network? Well, she didn't say the bonbon part, but no. Because how are you going to do the self-assessment of who you want and who you are and what you want if you don't know what's out there? So by making the network to figure out what's out there, at this point you're not even asking for jobs. You're just asking, what do you do? Right? What do you do day to day? And these seminars, these symposiums are a great way to feel like you're getting a ton of information all day long. Unfortunately, there's no magic pill that you're going home with saying, woohoo, if I take this pill, I'll get a job in X. You're not going to get that. You're going to get, oh, that sounds kind of interesting, or, oh, there's no way I'm going to be a consultant, right? You're getting that kind of information today, but you need to be starting to follow up and really to have a one-on-one conversation with somebody because you're not going to get all the information you need from a panel. So definitely not. As you're doing the self-assessment, you're building your network at the same time because the two go hand in hand.
So I have to go back to the approaching people without that whole feeling of you're just asking for a job and getting over that concept, because I think right now at the stage that I'm at, I'm like, well, I would like to have an informative interview with you. I just want an information interview. I still feel like I'm taking from that person. I'm taking their time, getting their knowledge. How do you offer something back so you have this mutual connection?
There's a couple of things I can recommend for that one. Mm-hmm. You can always offer to buy them a cup of coffee. All right? You've thus given them something. Informational interviews are another one of those ones where it's hard to make the first one, but once you do, it gets better. People do like to talk, and especially scientists within the community above and above us, they like to talk about how they got there because they know how difficult it is to make that transition, no matter what transition you're actually making. So you'll be surprised if you actually do get a no for an informational interview. I'd be really surprised if somebody said no for you. They may tell you, I can't do it for 6 months, but I'd be surprised if you ever got a no. The thing you can give back to that person in most 100% is a respect for their time. Okay? You are prepared, you are well organized, and you are ready to go, and you are on time. There's nothing worse to a busy person than a lack of respect for their time. Not ending on time, not starting on time. That's miserable. If you can give them back a respect of their time, that's a perfect first way to give something back to the relationship. All right, you guys are probably done. thank you. There is another reception out in the lobby, a networking reception between 3:30 and 5-ish, I think, something like that. And there's another reception later on this afternoon that you'll have to talk to somebody at Felcom or GSC about, because I'm not allowed to say. Thanks, guys.